following is a presentation of the Match Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO and, of course, on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall. Episode 48 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. Today we'll be joined by USA Wrestling Executive Director Rich Bender. Rich, quite the construction project going on at USA Wrestling. And yes, that is our international wrestling styles, but also the building you guys on Lehman Drive. I understand it's been gutted. You guys are getting some new swag there on the walls.
Well, I don't know if gutted is the right word. Certainly we've slapped on a new coat of paint and put some new carpet down. And thanks to our friends down in Texas and Steve Silver, we got some new furniture around here. So a little refresh and, it's looking pretty nice today. We're still a little bit of a construction zone here, but things are starting to shape up.
Yeah, I'm getting pictures from Tony Black and Ryan Johnson about some remnants, some artifacts that I left behind during my tenure there. Apparently the Hickory Wrestling sticker just said Hick Wrestling by the end of it, and there was a stop sign that paid homage to Buffalo Wild Wings and the Bison Turf, so questions surrounding there. But, with the construction getting things figured out, new digs, there's actually an aura of excitement after the summer that especially the men's freestyle team had and the program had with the World Championship in Paris, the Junior World Championship in Finland, and the cadets' performance in Athens. In short, how do you just sum up what this summer has meant for USA Wrestling?
Well, it's been a very rewarding summer for many people, right? It's not just USA Wrestling. The sports enjoyed some really solid success. It's on an upward trajectory. And anytime you can win a world team championships for the third time in the history for their men's freestyle team and our junior team coming in with a championship, obviously for the first time, we won them both the same year. So a great summer competitively. And I think, a lot of upward trajectory for the sport of wrestling right now.
When you look at how the foundation of these championships are built, I want to backtrack before we talk about the coaching staff and the personnel that were on these teams. A lot of this stuff started getting in motion before Zeke Jones even left. And how did all these little pieces come together, starting with what Zeke walked into when he was the job there and what he left for Coach Burnett and then what Coach Burnett left for Coach Zadik?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people are, and myself included, are pointing to the effort and the focus and the resources that were driven into our age group and developmental programs here at USA Wrestling. And I think the fruits of that labor was harvested this summer and continues to be harvested. Obviously, those of you that followed the cadet team, our team strong at the youngest level as well. But it started with just a focus on junior development and just the landscape changing within college wrestling, the development of the regional training centers, giving the organization the ability to drive some focus and resource down a level into the junior and cadet age group and using resources like the United States Olympic Committee's training center here in Colorado Springs to service that age group is certainly the foundation by which this success was built.
And some of that also started with different hirings a couple years ago when you brought Les Gutchess on board and Cody Bickley with Coaches Education. Now Cody is into a position where he's the high performance manager, and that's a term that doesn't get thrown around or hadn't been thrown around a lot in wrestling. It's a term they use in other sports within the Olympic family. But what have those two people specifically done for USA Wrestling and this entire, influence and push for age group development?
Well, Les Gutchess has had a monstrous impact on the organization and in the sport. It, somewhat of an unsung hero in what goes on in the wrestling world, in particular here at USA Wrestling. But when Les came to the organization, he brought an incredible amount of credibility and respect within the wrestling world. And obviously, Les has been very successful on the mat and very, very intelligent businessman that we were able to hire away from the banking industry to come to the organization and give us a fresh look with really the ability to not only look at opportunities within the organization from a business perspective, but also being able to wind that together with some incredible competitive experience, I think has been just, I mean, it's hard to put into words the value that Les Gutchess brings to the organization every day. And Cody Bickley, Cody, and kind of overusing the term already in this interview of unsung hero, but Cody Bickley is the guy behind the scenes. And I think if you talk to any one of our world team members, whether that's from the cadet level all the way up to the senior level, and ask them about, you know, the resources that are provided to them by USA Wrestling, Cody Bickley specifically comes to the top of the list almost every time. And Cody just is an incredibly hardworking guy, has a fascinating background in the sport and as an elite administrator, athletic director, and just brings a skill set to the organization that is really refreshing. Now, he's filling some big shoes. Mitch Hull sat in that chair for a long time, and obviously we've had a lot of success with Mitch, and Cody just continued on with the progress that Mitch had set in place, and just has really exceeded all of our expectations in terms of, you know, his ability to get some things done here and change some and implement some programs that have really made a huge difference for our teams.
For those who are really unfamiliar with how the structure of USA Wrestling works, it is a nonprofit under the Olympic body. The headquarters of the USOC is right down there in Colorado Springs. How much does that help from an NGP perspective to be that close to the USOC?
Well, certainly the USOC is an integral partner of ours. To kind of put it in perspective, I think sometimes the financial investment that the U.S. Olympic Committee makes in wrestling is sometimes a little bit misunderstood. If you look at it just from a dollars and cents perspective, it's 10% of our budget comes from the U.S. Olympic Committee. But the biggest benefit, and certainly I shouldn't say the biggest, but probably the more significant benefit is the other resources and assets that the U.S. Olympic Committee brings to bear as we, work to try to provide opportunities for kids to achieve their full athletic and human potential and win medals at the Olympic Games and the World Championships. But they bring so much other to the table, and that's resources, i.e., the U.S. Olympic Training Center, other assets such as sports medicine, sports psych, strength and conditioning, and just a great resource for us because they're working with nearly 50 other national governing bodies and just a huge resource for us in terms of best practices. And obviously I think a lot of times people make the assumption that what we do is all really, really wrestling centric, meaning, you know, what works in wrestling probably doesn't work in other sports. And that's not necessarily true a lot of the time. Sometimes it is, but a lot of times it isn't. And the USOC being here in town and being able to access those other assets are really, really the big value of being in the same town as the U.S. Olympic Committee.
And while the programs, especially freestyle, are more or less splintered through regional training center models, Greco-Roman and women really use the facilities there primarily as their main sources, even though there are the Army has their group down in Fort Carson in Northern Michigan, and then the program starting up at Williams Baptist in Arkansas. But the renovation to the wrestling room, I went in there about 2 years ago and saw what was just an amazing display. I think what 8 to 10 mats floating around versus where it used to be just a narrow bank of 3 mats. How much do you think those facilities have been able to help the national team coaches, whether it be Coach Zadik, Coach Lindland, or Coach Steiner, really get their camps and their training systems working, not just with their senior athletes, but for developmental athletes as well?
Well, it's been significant. And I think the fact that we just have, you know, the resources there, the space to be able to schedule training when our coaches want to schedule training, and not be so overly sensitive to what the other two disciplines are doing. We have a wall that we can drop down and really utilize the space in a couple of different ways at one time. So, and that's been pretty significant in our ability to get the numbers of kids here in town and really provide them with the support and resources they need to have a good solid training camp. And I kind of wanted to go back on what you said about, certainly our elite program has been spread out across the country, and decentralized, I think, is the word that is used a lot in terms of the training for our elite team. But that doesn't mean that our freestyle program isn't using the training center in a lot of ways, very similar to the way we were before with senior guys, only now with juniors. And when we were able to hire Kevin Jackson and Joe Russell to come in here and support Bill, I mean, we are putting a big focus on age group development on the freestyle side and utilizing a lot of those United States Olympic Training Center resources for our elite younger kids. So I think it's still consuming a lot of bed nights at the training center, but in a different way.
Yeah, you mentioned Kevin Jackson, who was involved in the developmental program since coming on board again, but he was the head Olympic coach, the national team coach going through 2008. And that brings up an interesting dynamic as a guy who, I guess the way I understand it, kind of fell on the sword after 2008 with relatively a subpar quad, despite, you know, getting champions like Henry Cejudo at the Olympics. What did that bring to your situation where you're like, okay, this guy was let go on my watch. Now I'm bringing him back on my watch. What was that dynamic like when it came to the hiring process?
Well, certainly I think sometimes in life a change is good, and it just kind of an organizational or a program reset is positive. One thing that was never in question, ever in question when Kevin Jackson worked for USA Wrestling, he's a great coach and even a better person, and somebody that, I mean, I think you probably used a pretty good term, that, you know, obviously a subpar quad, and, you know, just the organization was looking for a change and an adjustment. And, you know, I think the stars aligned and we were able to get a huge, huge asset back in under the roof here at USA Wrestling. And Kevin Jackson, I assure you, is one of the top wrestling coaches on the planet. And I think, history, if you look back at history in terms of success that we enjoyed while he was coaching with our age group kids is impressive. And I mean, the list is pretty endless. And obviously, Kevin's in a little bit different role here, but man, we are as a sport and as an organization, just so incredibly grateful and fortunate that we have him back on the team. And really excited about the future. You know, it's not off to a bad start either, by the way.
Yeah, when you look at it from a top down, from a leadership approach, do you look, you know, it looks like he's fresher. You know, it seems like as you're the national team coach, there is a lot of pressure that comes with that position. Whereas when you're training the development, yes, there's pressure, but it definitely looks like he's having a lot more fun than he did kind of in the tail end of his years there the first time.
Yeah, I think, obviously Kevin would be the one to ask that, but certainly, and Kevin, when he was here before, was a joy to work with. I mean, really one of the most popular staff members that we had here in the building, and Kevin is a very, very positive person, somebody that the glass is half full with him all the time. And I think he's enjoying it. I'm certain he's enjoying it, and I think, you know, he's got just the perfect skill set for that development program. And, you know, we're really excited about the future with him leading that part of our effort.
Shifting gears to the women's program, which saw a real, you know, shining moment last year in Rio when Helen Maroulis finally broke through that glass ceiling of women's wrestling in the United States, becoming the first woman to win an Olympic championship. And then follows it up with just one of the most dominant performances in wrestling history, shutting out her opponents 52-0 on way to a third straight world or Olympic championship at a third different weight class. From the office there, from the leadership perspective in dealing with the state organizations and the grassroots movement, what have you seen regarding the impact of Helen's feat that is beyond just the elite level? What is this really done from the trickle down effect into the grassroots and the state associations?
Well, I think, you know, there's few times in life when you get to experience the creation of a hero and somebody that is kind of transcending the sport, somebody that's truly become someone that inspires not just a couple of people, but hundreds and thousands of people to participate in something. And, you know, Helen's done that with women's wrestling. I mean, her feat in Rio was nothing short of spectacular. And if you look at the history books, I mean, she's had a couple of back-to-back pretty impressive world championships too, not being scored upon. And I think the nice thing or the great thing about Helen is, not only is she, you know, arguably the best women's wrestler on the planet, but she's also one of the best people. And I think for me, that's the really refreshing thing. I mean, she, not dissimilar to a lot of wrestler, elite wrestlers, lives her life right and sets the example that, yeah, I mean, it just tears down all the barriers. And, you know, you might be someone that has a disposition against women's wrestling, but you're around Helen Morales for about 15 minutes and see how she lives her life and trains and competes. And, the tenacity by which she approaches the sport is nothing short of inspiring, not only for young girls, but just young wrestlers. And she inspires me. So we are, you know, very, very fortunate to have someone like Helen as the face of our women's program, and in a really exciting and important time as the sport starts to really get its legs and start to progress and develop into the sport that we think it will, obviously.
Now, there's one similarity, too, between some of the success that we're seeing from the men's side with the RTCs and Helen, who has been following the travels and living situations of Valentin Kalika, who was in California. Now he's back in New York where she's out following him. And what similarities did you see from, say, what Mark Manning gets to do with Jordan Burroughs and James Green at Nebraska at their regional training center versus what you've seen from Helen under Valentin with his tutelage and how it relates to Terry Steiner's coaching track?
Well, I think one of the most significant benefits, and I don't want to say the only, or, you know, maybe the most significant is not the right term, but with the development of the regional training center model, our elite athletes are getting more and more one-on-one specific coaching attention that, you know, when in a situation where, you know, you have a coach that is responsible for an entire national team, and you know, maybe some are training in Colorado Springs, some are not, but the depth of the commitment by our regional training center coaches, and most of those are our college wrestling coaches, paying attention to athletes and making sure that they are in an environment that they not only are getting, you know, all the physical needs all the training needs, but also the living needs. And there's some similarities to, you know, the attention that Coach Kalika pays to Helen in those smaller regional training center environments, I think is paid dividends for Helen for sure. And, you know, so I think the fact that we have these, you know, 50 plus regional training centers and probably hundreds of coaches that are now pouring into elite wrestlers, I think it's really starting to show how good a coaches we have in the United States. And you know, with the right support, how we can realize some pretty cool success.
Sticking with the women's theme, a couple of the athletes that have had success for USA Wrestling in their senior level and their careers overall have jump-started with this Wrestle Like a Girl campaign. USA Wrestling, the NWCA, National Wrestling Hall of Fame, a number of organizations have been behind the emerging sports status for that crusade for women's wrestling. And when you see somebody like Sally Roberts and Catherine Shy leading the way with Wrestle Like a Girl, and these are people who have come through the USA Wrestling system through various different backgrounds, where Sally was discovered wrestling to keep herself out of trouble. Catherine, her father was an Olympian, coming together with a common goal. How, you know, when the NCAA gets this thing passed, and I think all of us are believing this is going to happen soon, that this will just jump women's wrestling in this country to another level and also give just another, I guess, for lack of a better term, a true farm system for metals worlds and beyond.
Well, certainly. And I mean, I think we all knew or know that, I mean, it's true. And I say this frequently when I talk to folks, and that is, I'm convinced that any experience anyone has in the sport of wrestling is positive, meaning that it, regardless of, you know, the depth of your participation, but anytime that you are participating in the sport of wrestling or are impacted by the sport, it's positive. It makes you a better person, period. That's kind of a bold statement, but I feel that to be, I mean, I believe that to be true in the bottom of my heart, that every single person that's been, that's participated in wrestling is better for it, period. And that's, and we knew that was true for men and women, boys and girls. It's just, what's really refreshing now is when you see individuals like Sally Roberts have the kind of success that she's having off the mat, and attributing that success and that maybe in some cases change of direction in her life because of wrestling. And I mean, there's no more powerful example or more powerful statement than a living example of how wrestling changed someone's life for the positive. And, you know, Terry Steiner said it from the day we hired him, that right, wrestling is great for people, and it shouldn't be great just for boys, because we know it's great for girls too, and for females to have that same benefit. And Sally Roberts, living proof of that, where wrestling has had an incredibly positive impact on her life. And what's really inspiring for me and for many other people is that she recognizes that and has shoved all in on giving back and trying to ensure as many young girls and boys too, by the way, she doesn't just help girls, but as many young kids as possible can be positively impacted by the greatest sport man's ever known. And I think it's inspiring to see her success and see how she has just went all in on giving back.
Talking about our third style, Greco-Roman, which has seen its share of success and its share of distress, so to speak. Kamal Bey was kind of the highlight of the year, winning a junior world championship and putting up just buckets of points. I mean, over in Finland, you had people that were running the tournament that have seen a ton of international wrestling going, 61 points! He scored 61 points in Greco-Roman! I mean, it's an exciting time when you get somebody like that can really show the art and explosiveness of Greco-Roman wrestling. But when you bring in a new coach in the middle of the last quad, and then you know, a guy like Matt Lindland, who's got success at the world and Olympic level, you're still fighting the, I guess, favored styles of the United States with the leg grabbing, the folk style, and the freestyle wrestling. What do you think is the key for Greco-Roman to get to the point where it's elevating its status, not just among fans of the United States, but its place in the world at those medal podiums?
Well, you're exactly right in terms of, you know, culturally in the United States, what is the kind of the default style is certainly folk style, freestyle in the United States. And nothing raises the relevancy of a sport, and i.e., Greco-Roman wrestling, the relevancy of Greco-Roman wrestling in the United States can certainly be impacted by success on the elite level for us. The challenge that we're facing right now is the sport's going through a transition. And I think it's, you're right, our international federation is working diligently to try to figure out how we can, you know, have the right rules in place so that the sport is enjoyable to watch. And it's in a transition right now, a transition from, the International Federation is making a conscious effort trying to get the sport back to the classical days and of the 70s, where big risks were being taken, spectacular throws. And, you know, unfortunately through, I wouldn't say recent, but that time before, 2013, when the sport seemed to be always in somewhat of a transition from that traditional style, Greco-Roman style, to whether it's forced parterre or went to the reverse lift or the clinch or the ball pull, where the sport evolved into, you know, this parterre sport where, you know, wrestlers were just trained and coached to be proficient on the feet and then, you know, win or lose the match in parterre. And then the International Federation made the conscious decision that, hey, we want to go back to try to instill this excitement of wrestling on your feet where big risks were being taken and throws and, you know, kind of the classical Greco-Roman style. The sport was kind of caught in a transition where you have a generation of athletes that have trained and coached in not doing that and winning and being successful in parterre, not everybody, but the point is the sports, you know, now to jump back, it's difficult because, you know, I don't think it's a shock to hear me say that, you know, it wasn't a great world championships for Greco-Roman wrestling. And I'm not saying that just because, you know, we didn't have the kind of competitive success that we wanted. But I mean, anytime you go through a first day of competition in 35 periods, there's no score. That's not exciting for anybody. And that's, I mean, one of the, I think if it's not the most important thing that the International Federation is working on right now is trying to figure out how do we accomplish the goal of getting back to that style of wrestling that is really appealing and fan friendly and exciting. And how do we transition to that from where we were? And I think that's the million-dollar question. And if that's some forced parterre, which I think that's what's going to happen here, is some forced parterre so that there are some points being scored potentially. But, yeah, it's a tough one. And I wish I could say that, you know, I had the competitive answer on how we can win more medals. And one thing I do know is that we have a fantastic coach in Matt Lindland. And I think Gary Mahab just got hired here. He's going to have an incredible impact on our development program. And I think we're going to see some competitive results soon. And not that we didn't have good competitive results at the age group level, because obviously you just said Kamal Bey is one of the most exciting wrestlers, regardless of any style, that I've seen in 30 years. And I think, you know, the future is bright. It's just getting there and, you know, putting a program in place that can be successful under whatever the rules are. I think right now the challenge is to set those rules so that, you know, we can really start to build a strategy and a foundation about how we're training and preparing athletes to be successful in the style.
A lot of talk about what the weight classes are going to do with the freestyle team, but in terms of Greco, now we mentioned Kamal Bey, but again, Mason Manville was the representative at that weight class at the senior level, 20 years old, 21 years old, young kid. Colton Schultz, of course, won the cadet championship at 100 kilos, and he was on the junior and cadet world championship team, so he's getting experience there. But when we look at the weight classes, this kind of goes into our next discussion about where wrestling fits in the vein of the IOC and with the world championships within United World Wrestling. The weight classes can give those options where the young guns, it seems like the young guns at Finland and in Athens were more apt to throw people on their heads in Greco-Roman than the senior levels. Do you think it's just a matter of time and say, okay, we can wait this out? These young guys around the world need to get on these teams because the Greco-Roman World Championships at the juniors were infinitely more exciting than they were in Paris when you've got, you know, great wrestlers like Riza Kayal scoring no takedowns and winning a world championship. So I think it's a matter of time, but does the sport have that time to wait to get guys like Manville, Bay, and Felix Baldoff, who we did see from Norway, a young guy that had a bad tournament? Those guys are grip it and rip it types.
I hope so. I hope we do have the time to get to the point to where, you know, we're seeing that kind of action and scoring at the highest level. But don't kid yourself. It's also true, and this is, I mean, it's not unique to Greco. There tends to be more scoring at the age group level, period. And, you know, I think when you get to that elite level and the separation, talent separation is smaller and smaller between more and more competitors, it's natural that that's not the same number of points are being scored. But I certainly think that we have a generation coming that's going to really give Greco-Roman a push forward in terms of just their attitude and the way that they approach the sport. And that's not taking a shot at their existing team, because I think athletes are training to be successful in whatever the rules are. And I think when it was a situation where you just need to be proficient in your feet and win and lose the match in parterre, it's, you train differently, right? And that doesn't, and when you take that situation away and then change the rules and say, okay, now, you know, score on your feet, right? There's skills that need to be developed there and training and adaptation to the new styles, but or the new rules. But you're 100% correct. There are some studs coming at the age group level in Greco-Roman wrestling, and I think the foundation is in place for us to be really good. We're doing our best to try to provide whatever help and input we can to the International Federation to get the rules fixed and get on down the road.
Now, as we talk with the International Federations, you and I sat in Dortmund, Germany at the European Junior Championships. You were in town as there were meetings throughout the leadership in United World Wrestling with the various bureau members and whatnot. And a lot of those discussions are technical discussions on what the rules are going to be and things of that nature. But the weight class discussion seemed to be one that was real. A lot of Americans were clinging on because, again, from a freestyle perspective, we're looking at a scenario where you can get Burroughs, Dake, Cox, Taylor, all on the same team in those situations. So just from a little maybe a insider's point of view, how did the weight classes get determined the way they were? How do those meetings get set up? And how is the input from each style dependent on which federations are represented on those bureaus?
Well, so you're referring to the technical commission, in which I have the pleasure of serving on. And the technical commission's responsibility is to make recommendations to the International Federation Board, the UWW Bureau, on weight classes, rule changes, a number of things. And one of the primary goals that we had when my first meeting on the technical commission, our first goal was to expand the weight classes. And we feel pretty passionate about the fact that more is better in this scenario, in that the sport is, I'm not sure I have scientific data to prove this, but I believe that in wrestling, weight is more of a factor in competitive results than most of the other combative sports, whether that's judo or taekwondo or boxing. And so therefore, what I'm saying is, I think you cut a lot more people out by having fewer weight classes in the sport of wrestling than you do any other sport. So I don't think it's fair to look through the same lens when you're looking at wrestling as you do other sports, which our International Federation or the International Olympic Committee, I think, tends to do from time to time. And so it was, we were really passionate about setting an argument and a proposal in play to take our weight classes back to 10, where they were not that long ago. And the point that we made was, look, you look at a guy like Logan Stieber, and Logan Stieber is the world champion, and there's not an asterisk by his name. And when we celebrate all over the United States the fact that Logan Stieber is a world champion, we don't say, oh, non-Olympic weight. And my point to our international federation was, that's powerful, and we shouldn't approach how we conduct and organize and operate the sport of wrestling with this restriction on what we think the International Olympic Committee thinks we should do with one event every 4 years. And I think, for years we kind of got in that mindset that we didn't do anything because we were afraid that, well, the IOC might not. They don't want us to go to 10 weights. What do you mean they don't want us? We're not talking about the Olympic Games. Yeah, we want 10 weights in the Olympic Games, but why should we limit our ability to have a more relevant impact around the world in our sport based on obviously a group of people that didn't seem to care that much about us in 2013 to keep us or restrict us from moving forward. So we had a really, really, really focused effort to get the International Federation to agree to go to 10 weights. And then you asked me about how to get to the 10 weights. And it was, I mean, I think when we first started the process, it was, I thought, a lot simpler than it ended up being. I mean, I thought the best way was to get some real data, you know, and, you know, not just straight world demographics, but maybe demographics on a, you know, the within the sport or, you know, within the healthy segment of the world population, and figure out where those weight classes should be. And it's, and I think it's probably human nature that many couldn't just step back and say, hey, let's do this scientifically, and let's provide the most opportunity for the most people as we possibly can in the sport, and not think about the current, oh, that where is this guy going to go, or where is that guy going to go, and or this girl. And I think it's that became obvious. It became obvious to me early on that was going to be something that we're going to have to deal with. That some just and I don't mean that. It sounds really insensitive to the current athletes, but I mean, in my mind, you know, the most important thing was to establish weight classes that provided the most opportunity for the most people. And you know, I think we came to the conclusion in as late as Paris that, you know, the 8 weight classes we have right now are pretty good, and why not just add a couple? And I'm a strong proponent for adding more lighter weights. And I don't, this isn't meant as a slam towards big guys or girls, but I think for our sport to be successful, right, you want it to be exciting and enjoyable to watch. And I think, you know, statistics will show that more points are scored at the lighter weights. Plus, I think, you know, we've drifted away from, I mean, our weight classes have drifted heavier, and obviously the worldwide population has done the same. But I think, thinking back of, you know, some of the most exciting wrestling matches I've experienced in my 30 years at USA Wrestling, were a lot of them in those lightweights that aren't even offered anymore. You think about guys like Valentin Jurdanov and Zeke Jones and Tim Vanney and Rob Eider and Lou Roselli, guys that have, you know, had a lot of success. You know, those weight classes aren't around anymore. So I think that's one of the challenges as we move forward is, you know, are these the right weights? And so, I mean, I wish I could get on this call and say, hey, there was this big scientific equation that we went through and came to this conclusion that these were the right weights. But, you know, to be honest with you, there was an effort made at the, kind of the last minute to come up with the proposal that was ultimately approved by the International Federation. I mean, our support of that did ultimately come down to looking at, hey, where are kids going to fit in here? And is it going to be, you know, positive? And, you know, the format of the World Championships is changing too, as you know, 2-day format, more of a American style weigh-in situation, a couple hours before the competition, multiple weigh-ins. I think, you know, that probably gives us a little bit of an advantage because, you know, we're used to that environment. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we're not fans of cutting weight, and certainly think that, you know, it's better, certainly better not to cut weight. And I think if you look at our team and those athletes that are having sustained success, they're not cutting a bunch of weight. So, you know, the weight classes are what they are, but I think, you know, certainly if you look in the short term, and certainly specifically at the men's freestyle team, you can get pretty excited about where you think some people are going to fall.
You know, Rich, you've been involved in the USOC and understanding how the IOC's, you know, sometimes mind-boggling formats can work. Where are we? Because there's a lot of, I guess, misinformation out there about where we are in terms of this terminology of core sports. Is that still a thing? I know we're good for Tokyo. You know, with 24 given to Paris, 28 coming back to L.A., we're in a situation where the Olympics, people have a real bad taste in their mouth about the IOC with the doping scandals. Of course, the Russian documentary, the Icarus thing that's coming out, have come out already. And when we look at wrestling from a fan standpoint, where are we with the IOC? We lost a couple entries, basically evening out the weight classes for the Olympic weights at about 16 apiece. So it's viewed that we're losing spots. I mean, where are we at potentially getting more weights back in the games, the quotas? How does this system work for the layperson that really doesn't understand how the IOC works with the Olympic numbers?
Well, first, let's back up and talk a little bit about how we got to where we were in 2013. And if you remember, the president of the International Olympic Committee, Jacques Rogge, had laid out an agenda for his presidency, and it was part of his agenda was to modernize the Olympic Games. And his first step in the modernization process was to take the program from the 26 core sports to 28. And they had a process in place by which they selected two more sports. They added rugby 7 and golf to the Olympic program in Rio. So went from 26 sports to 28. And then the last part of his agenda was to look at the other 26 sports, evaluate if one should come out. And in fact, Nick, in his agenda, he had already made the evaluation that one was going to come out. But there was an evaluation process to determine which one of those 26 sports should come off the program and another sport added. So, you know, the ultimate agenda was to add three new sports. And not to go into the details on why wrestling, I mean, I'd love to, but
I think we all realize why wrestling was put in the position it was put in that year. And at least from my perspective, I mean, having worked there and then being a wrestling person, thank goodness we got these new rules, because it's made the sport a lot more watchable, because that previous ball draw 100-110 crap, it was really a bad era for us. But that, I think we can all understand, well, that's probably why we were put in that position too.
It ended up. I mean, there were a lot of things, but it ended up being the best thing that's ever happened to the sport of wrestling, I think. And so that was part of the presidential agenda to modernize the games. And you know, the Olympic Charter does refer to core sports in the charter, and wrestling was put back in as one of the they call it Olympic sports. And the new president, Thomas Bach, in his agenda and Vision 2020, it talks about the fact that there'll be no more discussion about core or non-core sports, just specific disciplines maybe fluctuating in and out of the program. And what's a little bit alarming about that, obviously, is, you know, we don't like the idea of someone coming to wrestling and saying, okay, we're gonna have you sit out this Olympic quad with this specific discipline. Wrestling's on the program. Wrestling's, you know, it's an Olympic sport, and it'll be Olympic sport for hopefully ever. But it's just it's a different conversation now. There's not this conversation about, well, if you're on the core or you're not on the core. The sports are all categorized in, I believe, five different categories. Category 1, which includes just track and field, swimming, and I believe gymnastics. And you know, wrestling is one up from the bottom. And this year, it was pretty well publicized. Some sports were brought down into that category. Our International Federation has an objective to move up in the ranking, and that's for a couple of reasons. One is, you know, just it raises the relevancy of a sport within the International Olympic Committee eyes, but more importantly, it affects the funding by which that the International Federation is given from the IOC, and it's a different funding model for the higher the category sport. But so Thomas Bach has said, look, we're not. He just recently came out and said, we're not adjusting the program for Paris, and that it'll be the same as Tokyo. But I think there's still, I mean, we still need to be motivated and diligent about, you know, doing everything in our power to raise the relevancy and ensure that, you know, we're strong. And one of the things that I think has been a little bit misunderstood about the recent reduction in numbers, that was part of a discussion and an agreement that was made to get us back on the program, that wrestling would drift to a 16-man bracket. And I think there's been a lot of misunderstanding out there that, oh, the IOC came to wrestling and wasn't happy with the progress and said, we're cutting you back. And that's not true. I mean, the reality is this was an agreement that Lalovich made to get wrestling reinstated. And it wasn't an agreement to say, if you don't, you won't get back on the program. But it was, part of the discussion and the as wrestling kind of reimagined itself in 2013 and understood the pressure that the International Olympic Committee was under in terms of total athlete numbers, that was, some people thought that made sense. And I think, at the end of the day, if it resulted in us staying on the program, probably a great decision. But, did you need to do it? Who knows? But there's a constant effort by many within the wrestling community to look at ways that we can grow our participation at the Olympic Games, because, I kind of make light of the fact it's one event every 4 years. It's certainly an important event and one that, we'd love to have all 10 weight classes represented, but also recognize the fact that we're not gender neutral either, right? We have two men's disciplines and one female discipline. And, we have to keep that into account as we push, the IOC for more and more. But I think at the end of the day, wrestling is really solid on the Olympic program. I think with the fact that we have the president of International Federation now sitting at the table, a full IOC member, and many people think is destined for a more leadership role within the International Olympic Committee. I think, I'm not sure that would have been the case, or what would have happened in 13 would have happened if we would have had somebody at the table. Right? We had no representation. First time we've ever had a president of our international federations as a full-blooded IOC member. And, I think a lot of the reason we were putting that in that position in 2013 was just lack of information. And, we think that with International Federation president sitting at the table, we're going to be, at least aware of opportunities to grow and expand. And, we'll obviously look to him to, be the leader as we decide where we're going to push and where we're not.
As we look forward in trying to get these weight classes added, I know that there's been talk about adding, you were talking about gender neutrality, being gender neutral there, is adding, say beach wrestling or belt wrestling, which is now opened up the door for some of the Islamic countries to start having their women participate. Where do you see, is it going to be beach wrestling? Is it going to be belt wrestling that helps get us in line? And then maybe now we can come back to the table and be like, okay, now we're even, let's add some more weight classes and get this thing back to where it was back in the day.
Well, I think it would be a little bit probably irresponsible to introduce a sport that's not fully been developed. And belt wrestling is, right, it's being developed. And some rich history in some areas, but it's not it's certainly not participated at the same level that freestyle and Greco-Roman wrestling is. And beach wrestling, a lot the same. Is there an opportunity for beach wrestling to be an Olympic sport? Certainly, I think there is. But I think it would be really premature to think that we were going to implement or add a sport or a discipline to the Olympic program that hasn't fully been developed yet. So I think a lot has to be done yet in the development side of beach wrestling. I mean, we're still learning about it more and more here in the United States and offering more and more programs or opportunities for athletes to participate, but it's still, I think, a ways away from being an Olympic sport. I think, the elephant in the room is the fact that, we have a whole discipline that doesn't have female participation. So, are we in a position where, because the IOC has made no bones about the fact that, Olympic Games are going to be gender neutral. And so, we've got to, to not look at that and say, hey, we've got to have a plan would be irresponsible. Whether that's to grow participation and opportunity within the women's freestyle program or develop beach wrestling or, adjust to a style that is more gender neutral like beach. I think remains to be seen. But you know, it's a complicated situation. The good news is freestyle wrestling is really good right now. Freestyle wrestling, I think, is exciting. The rules are as good as maybe they've ever been. And you know, I guess I've been around 30 years, not as long as some others have, but and that's not just because we're good. I mean, it's because the sport is good. And I think, you know, that's where, you know, when we're dealing with the International Olympic Committee, we've got to play our best hand and, you know, be deliberate about these, you know, growth opportunities and not just, hey, we want to have a bigger presence on the Olympic program, so let's add another discipline. And I mean, let's do it the right way and make sure it's the right discipline.
As we circle back and get things on the horn domestically, we had quite an experience in Lincoln this past year with the men's freestyle world team trials, whereas the women in Greco were a part of the U.S. Open weekend in Vegas. How's that structure going to be moving forward with the calendar now pushing the senior world championships into October? Our age groups are spread out. There's less of a tightness between your staff and putting on something like Fargo and leading into the world championships. But you know, there's also the prowl thing that's floating around. There's some rumors floating around on what that's going to potentially do if there's discussions there. So what can you tell us about the calendar and how the structure is going to work? Maybe an upcoming location for the trials. Are they going to be split still or together? And maybe Xander Schultz's prowl influence here.
Well, certainly, you know, Alexander Schultz and Mike Novogratz and Matt Novogratz and the prowl effort is something that we are certainly working with them to come up with a solution and an offering and a promotion that we think potentially changes the game for wrestling in the United States. And I know that's probably given you a little information and you want a lot. And I mean, there's still a lot that we're working on, but we think that there is a huge opportunity for wrestling. And I think the difference in this opportunity, as opposed to those in the past, when it comes to just promotion and raising the relevance of individuals, is been that those efforts in the past have usually been made outside of, you know, our traditional USA wrestling program, whether that's, you know, a real pro wrestling effort where, you know, athletes were wrestling kind of a little different style. And it was kind of almost an either or proposition. Either you're going to, you know, go all in on this, or you're going to try to make a U.S. team and win the Olympics or the world. And I think what's really exciting about the prowl effort is that it's in complete unison with USA Wrestling. I mean, we're working together every day. We're talking about how we can come up with a system that selects the best athletes to represent the United States in at the World Olympic Games, but also provides a promotion and a platform by which we can just drive the relevancy of our sport to a different level. And I think, you know, there's, you know, probably an opportunity for a show on that coming up, because we're working really hard with Alexander and Mike and Matt to work that out. In fact, our team was out in New York earlier this week hammering some things out, and a lot of questions, a lot of it's right. It's not comfortable when you're on top to say you want to change a bunch of things. So obviously, that's some things that we're working through. Is, you know, we don't want it to be an either or situation. Either we're going to have this promotion, or we're going to be successful at the highest level. We're bullish about both, right? I mean, we want to promote our sport and market our athletes and win. And so in terms of the schedule, I think I know that because as on the technical commission, one of the things that we talked about when we were in Dortmund was the schedule. What's the annual calendar look like? Not specifically where, but just timing wise. And we weren't big fans of moving it so late into October. And I think moving forward, the world championships will fall now more in mid September than in mid October. I think, you know, this year we have the luxury of having our hands on our team, you know, for a longer period of time. And obviously giving Bill and his team an opportunity to get these athletes in the best form possible to win in Budapest in October. But I think that's going to change. I think we're going to go to September, mid-September. And so there probably won't be the luxury of having a big window that we have now. And a lot of moving parts right now. There's talk within college wrestling about going to a single semester sport, and what impact does that have on our trials process and opportunity for kids to wrestle collegiately and internationally is going to, I mean, if that happens, that'll put some pressure there and force us to be creative to and not put these kids in that either or scenario that I talked about.
Last thing, it's domestic, but it's back to the Olympic discussion. 2028, the Olympics are coming back to the United States. That's a long way ahead. We're talking about 10 and a half, 11 years before this thing really, we light the cauldron in Los Angeles. But how excited is the entire USOC, the Olympic family, the other NGB leaders that you've talked to that the Olympics are going to be coming back to the United States?
Well, I can speak for myself and someone that's been around the movement for a long time. And when Scott and I had Scott Blackman, the CEO of the U.S. Olympic Committee, discussed this a long time ago, before there was even public discussions about whether the opportunity existed for LA to host 28. I felt from day one that the 28 games were more valuable than the 24 games. And you might scratch your head and say, "What the heck are you talking about?" And what I'm saying is, I think having the games on in your country provides a lift for every Olympic sport. It provides an inspirational opportunity for each of these Olympic sports to inspire the next generation of kids that can look to that and say, "I'm going to be that kid. I'm going to be the Kyle Snyder that's going to win the gold medal in 2028." And I just think the 4-more-year window is more valuable. It gives you more time, and it gives you an opportunity to raise the relevancy of Olympic sports over a longer time frame. I think LA is going to be a spectacular host for the games. It's going to be a fantastic Olympic games, but I think it raises, the relevancy of national federations. What I mean by national federations, national governing bodies like USA Wrestling, it raises our relevancy in the wrestling world, just having the games on the calendar. It gives you more credibility and when you're running for positions or having, a voice in important meetings. I mean, that hosting the Olympic Games brings credibility. And, whether that's people thinking they're going to get something from you, or are going to get, be able to get a ticket or something, or, if you're coming to somebody's house, I think you tend to try to do your best to have a good relationship with them. And I think that really helps, not just wrestling, it helps every sport. And so I think I'm so juiced about the fact that was how everything fell into place, and you're really excited about the leadership in LA, and man, we got guys like Andy Barth and others in that city, and just thinking about the platform we're going to have to have a great Olympics is just really exciting for me.
Yeah, and last thing, we're focusing on LA. I do want to give the French some credit because they put on a fantastic World Championships. They're going to be our hosts in 2024 for the Olympics. So if they run the wrestling competition like they did at the Worlds, I think outside of some pretty tight security in spots, which I guess is a peace of mind, I think that the French did a great job, at least for how they're going to present wrestling. I know that their crew was great to work with from where I sat. So I'm actually pretty geeked out about 2024 going to Paris. I'm not going to use the word juiced. I don't think we should use that word in anything around the sport, but
okay.
Yeah. Your thoughts on Paris.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm biased and have, been involved with what I think is the operation of the best world championships that our sports ever had, in a couple of spots here in, Atlanta and New York and certainly Las Vegas. But I think Paris did the best job of anybody. I think that was the best world championships I've attended in the 30 years I've been involved. And I have to be totally honest and say some of that's a little bit helped by the fact that we won and, the experience that we had. I mean, winning's fun. But, the organizational effort they put forth, the presentation for the sport, from security to, I was one of those people that was a little bit twisted off at times about my lack of my inability to get where I thought I needed to be, but
or where your credentials said you could be. I had every number on my credential. Yeah. Like, I can't use that elevator. Are you kidding me? No.
Well, one of the things that I think a lot of people don't really recognize, because we certainly you know, if we have a coach or someone that doesn't, can't get where they think they need to be, or a personal coach or a training partner, they tend to think, oh, that's USA Wrestling's decision, or, you know, they're messing that up. And, you know, one of the I think the most significantly positive byproducts of the tighter security is that when I did go back in the warm-up area and around the athletes and the team, it was just coaches and athletes. It wasn't, and this is, you know, I'm not sure I could say this publicly, it wasn't, you know, there weren't 50 Russians walking around back there, or, you know, people that, you know, you're wondering, why are they back here? And, you know, from that perspective, I thought it was really, really positive. And, you know, first time that since I've been involved, the International Bureau were up in the stands where I think they should be and not down on the field of play. I thought the refereeing was really good at the World Championships this year. And certainly, I think, you know, you can always point to one or two matches where you scratch your head a little bit, but not only the operation of the championships in Paris was really good, but I thought the officiating, which we all know how important that is to our sport and for us to, you know, really have a chance outside of the niche wrestling community to promote wrestling and gain a fan base, is, right, people have to have the perception that it's fair. And I think, you know, hats off to the referees in Paris. I thought they did a great job. And certainly if the results continue the way they did this year, you know, we're in favor of not changing anything there, right? We're going to win it. So referees got to be good.
Rich Bender, we've had an opportunity to talk about a number
of... joke.
That a number of topics. Of course, we'll just won't put any time on the clock. We'll just talk about that. We won't talk about that, rather, but yeah. Rich Bender answered a bunch of questions here as he's been doing the tour, whether he was on Malicious Intent over on Flow or Mad Chat with David Mercatani now here on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. Rich, thanks for your time, as always.
Thanks, JB. I really appreciate it. I miss you having here. You're here in Colorado Springs, but certainly grateful for your tireless efforts, whether that's, you know, helping out an organizing committee like you did in Paris, or just your tireless efforts to promote and market the greatest sport man has ever known. I'm forever in your debt.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to matttalkonline.com.